I think it would be interesting to have Alan back in 3 years' time at the next colloquium to give us an update before he retires. The honour of the final presentation of the day goes to Chris Lyle. Chris Lyle is the ICAO representative from the United Nations World Tourism Organization. Chris.
Thank you. Now you know why they put tourism at the end of the day. It's so depressing. We need some escapism after these two guys. My talk is about, I've been asked to talk about both adaptation and interagency coordination from the tourism perspective, which will inevitably bring me a little bit into mitigation. And I would take argument with one of the earlier speakers, because I believe that tourism is probably affected more than aviation in terms of what is happening on climate change. So let's start with adaptation. This is illustrative because it's a photograph of a ski hill in Austria a couple of years ago in January. And I think it's illustrative because it shows you the first thing you do is you put in your snow guns. That costs you money, and you try and survive on that basis. The second thing you do is your ski resort, certainly at lower altitudes, disappears, and you have to look at other ways of bringing in the tourists and keeping the economy thriving. So climate change is not an abstract concept for tourism, and in fact, from the World Tourism Organization perspective, adaptation is our primary activity in the field of climate change at the present time associated with mitigation, a bit of a reverse from aviation. We see four pathways, what we call four pathways on adaptation. Firstly, the direct impacts, the winter sports holidays, the sun and sea destinations, the infrastructural damage, and the higher operating expenses. The second pathway is indirect environmental change impacts, such as water availability, biodiversity loss, coastal erosion. The third is impacts of mitigation policies on tourism mobility. You'll get changing travel patterns. And finally, indirect social change impacts with negative repercussions on climate change security hotspots. So adaptation is already very much underway in the tourism industry. This is a chart showing major climate change impacts affecting tourism destinations. Now, I don't expect you to be able to identify it. You can always look at it afterwards, but it identifies where you're expecting warmer summers, warmer winters, increase in extreme events, sea level rise, marine biodiversity loss, et cetera, et cetera, and identifies some tourism hotspots, which are the oval shapes there, which are primarily, and I noticed that they weren't in your airport's chart, but Caribbean, Mediterranean, the Indian Ocean islands, small islands, Pacific Ocean, small islands, and Australia and New Zealand. Other places, of course, are affected as well. So we see this impacting or working together with aviation. In terms of adaptation, we see passenger mobility changing. There will be changing travel patterns that I mentioned will, of course, apply to aviation, and that's fairly easy to adapt to. But then we have the operational safety impacts and the infrastructural impacts. And I won't go into those because they've been so well presented by the two previous speakers. So getting back to tourism, the increasing intensity and requirements for adaptation, which is on a year-by-year basis, is correlated with the increasing potential for climate destabilization and hence with the need for mitigation. We recognize, and we've heard that earlier today too, that even the most aggressive mitigation efforts will not eliminate the need for substantial adaptation. Tourism is thus focused both on adaptation and on mitigation from our own sectoral perspective as well as a global perspective. In relation to mitigation and aviation, the greenhouse gas emissions from travel and tourism are estimated to contribute about 5% in terms of global CO2 emissions, with air transport accounting for an estimated 40% of the travel and tourism contribution of CO2 and an estimated 60% of the international contribution of CO2. And it is overwhelmingly dominant, of course, at the medium and long haul. This is a projected travel and tourism CO2 emissions chart based on business as usual, based on IPCC. It has actually been updated just last month in the Journal of Sustainable Tourism, taking into account the paper by David Lee et al., which was published last year on the aviation front. As you can see, the international aviation component is particularly important as we move forward, and in fact, the paper last month implies that it's even bigger. So, our group of experts on climate change and tourism concluded that basically reducing flight numbers and flight distances would achieve more to make tourism more sustainable than most other measures taken together. At the same time, of course, we don't necessarily want to do that. We held a global conference on climate change and tourism in Davos in October 2007. And in the declaration, it said that the tourism sector must progressively reduce its greenhouse gas contribution and collaborate in international strategies in transport in cooperation with ICAO and other aviation organizations, which I guess is why I'm here today. Air transport and tourism are essentially locked at the hip. International air passengers are predominantly tourists. Tourists include both business and leisure travelers. Over half of international tourist arrivals are by air. That is a proportion which is increasing yearly, with much higher proportions for long-haul destinations. And we find that tourism and air transport traffic and revenues tend to move in lockstep, with tourism being more resilient in times of uncertainty when tourists stay closer to home, as they have over the past year. As with aviation, we see extensive traffic growth for the foreseeable future, and you can see the regional differences here in this chart. So coming back to the aviation targets, this is an index, and it shows the blue line is the growth in revenue traffic kilometers anticipated from 2009 to 2020 at 5% per annum, which is the kind of consensus of ICAO and manufacturers. The red line takes off the 1.5% per annum of industry CO2 efficiency target. And the green shaded area is the contribution to that target from alternative fuels. And finally, the orange line at the bottom is the ICAO fuel efficiency target, which is 2% off the 5%. So we conclude that technological, operational, and infrastructure enhancements continue to be substantial. We see that developments in alternative jet fuels are promising, but even together, they'll fall well short for the foreseeable future of countering anticipated growth in air traffic. In fact, in Copenhagen, the co-facilitator's final non-paper asked for a 10% reduction in aviation emissions by 2020, and you can see we are some way from that. Therefore, we conclude that economic instruments will be necessary and they are inevitable. The important thing is to make sure together that they are well designed. We do believe that such instruments have scope implications well beyond air transport and beyond national boundaries. An emissions policy for aviation is likely to have considerable consequences for destinations depending on tourism and travel. Let me talk about a paradox. The Seychelles Islands, one of those islands in the Indian Ocean, a group of islands in the Indian Ocean. Tourism is the dominant economic sector. It's predominantly dependent on long-haul international air transport. Tourism has enhanced the establishment of nature parks and marine protection areas. 47% of the land area of Seychelles is protected. Partly in consequence, the country is a net absorber of greenhouse gases. We believe there that therefore that air transport must be placed in context. Air transport is integral to tourism and should not be treated in isolation. I can draw a parallel here, I believe, with the concept of full life cycle emissions for alternative fuels. We believe it is somewhat narrow to just look at the aviation context. You should look at the full life cycle impact on the economy, on travel, tourism, and trade. So, moving towards my conclusions, this is what we believe regarding air transport and climate change. That mitigation measures should be set against broad spectrum travel, tourism, and trade, not for air transport in isolation. That the UN FCCC principle of common but differentiated responsibilities should be applied, that preferential treatment to air services should be given supporting the development of tourism in developing and small aviation market countries, and also that there should be an even-handed approach to the primary users between tourism and freight and amongst modes of transport. We believe that earmarking and recycling of revenues from levies or trading of emissions permits should go to GHG mitigation activities. There should be technology transfer and financing to poor countries, I believe an issue we're looking at tomorrow. Continued recognition of a key role for ICAO in technology, ATM, infrastructure and operations, and an open collegial forum for economic instruments and any global accord specific to aviation and or shipping in the context of Ban Ki-moon's Delivering as One United Nations initiative. Under Delivering as One, under the UNFCCC umbrella, we see the main provider organizations, the lead organizations, ICAO and IMO, the user organizations in the form of the World Tourism Organization, UNCTAD, the scientific organizations, and then also, I believe, there should be involvement by the World Bank, the private sector, and NGOs that are mentioned here. I'd like to mention in particular the World Economic Forum, which just this week on Monday has initiated a project on carbon neutral skies, which is a multidisciplinary project and looks to be of interest. They're working very closely with Booz and Company. That has nothing to do with the IATA reception coming up. We believe that if you take this route, and this has already been mentioned earlier today, you can move from silos to synergy. I think in particular it's interesting that two people earlier today have talked about the potential synergy between IMO and ICAO, between shipping and aviation. So, just throw out some ideas of thinking beyond the silos. How about a carbon tax on accommodation to purchase carbon credits for aviation to generate a truly carbon neutral destination? That is actually under consideration in one country right now. A carbon tax on jet fuel with the proceeds to production and distribution of alternative aviation fuels, which would meet the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities. A hybrid closed and open emissions trading system for aviation. I know ICAO has rejected a closed system, but the shipping industry is looking at a hybrid system, and perhaps ICAO should look at a hybrid system. Levy differentiating by route rather than solely by country. We've heard from the Aviation Global Deal Group earlier today, and we think it would be particularly helpful for least developed countries and small island developing states, of whom there don't seem to be very many represented in this hall, unfortunately. And maybe even joint ICAO and IMO proposals to UNFCCC. What if air transport doesn't achieve? This is a demonstration against the third runway at Heathrow. And we've heard about the uncoordinated patchwork of levies. Our main concern is that in the end you're going to get restrictions on capacity in one way or the other, perhaps through not having that third runway, for example. And like everybody else, there's some further information which you can pick up from the presentation. But I would like to end with a kicker, if I can call it that. It's from Airline Business. In rugby terms, the sidestep to evaluate being tackled on this issue will only work for so long. One day the big hit will come and it will hurt. Thank you.